Deadline's Pentagon says Ukraine's military has received additional aircraft and parts to repair others. Moscow has warned of unpredictable consequences. Boris Johnson apologizes to MPs after becoming UK's first prime minister to be fined for breaking the law. And Israeli forces attack Palestinians protesting against the occupation of their land, leaving dozens wounded. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. The latest from the Russian military operation in Ukraine. Moscow has announced a new ceasefire around a steel plant in Mariupol, the key remaining Ukrainian stronghold in the port city. Russia's defense ministry says Ukrainian soldiers are holed up in the factory, and should they lay down arms on Wednesday, Moscow offered a similar proposal on Tuesday, but no avail. Russia says national forces and foreign mercenaries there will be guaranteed survival if they surrender. Ukraine's officials say there are civilians inside the plant, and a presidential advisor has claimed Russia is hitting the plant with bunker buster bombs. The port of Mariupol has seen the heaviest fighting to date since Russia began its campaign on the 24th of February. In the meantime, U.S., Britain, and Canada have pledged more artillery assistance to Ukraine. The U.S. Defense Department says Ukraine's partners have provided the country with additional aircraft as well as spare parts to put the damaged planes back to action.
I would just say, without getting into what other nations are providing, that they have received additional platforms and parts to be able to increase their fleet size, their aircraft fleet size. I think I'd leave it at that.
The spokesman did not name the countries that provided aircraft, but he said the United States was not among them. Washington has announced plans to give Ukraine Russian-made helicopters that had once been intended for Afghanistan. Russia is advancing across almost the entire stretch of Ukraine's eastern front in its operation. A European official has said that up to 20,000 mercenaries from a Russian private security company, as well as Syria and Libya, are fighting alongside Russian forces. Ukraine says its forces are there to withstand Russian assaults. Security experts warn a move by EU nations Finland and Sweden to join NATO could potentially trigger a new world war. Governments in Helsinki and Stockholm say their decisions as to whether to join the alliance will be made within weeks. Jerome Hughes reports.
There are many security experts who claim the expansion of NATO in recent years close to Russia's borders and provocative military exercises are factors that brought about the conflict in Ukraine. Now EU members Finland and Sweden are poised to announce they want to join NATO. One analyst has been giving us his reaction via broadband.
That's a very serious escalation toward Russia, because this is when the United States will put nuclear bombs in Finland, and that would mean a direct escalation that Russia will not accept.
Finland shares a border with Russia that is more than 1,300 kilometres long. Moscow points out that if this country was to join the 30-nation alliance, NATO's land border with the Russian Federation would more than double in length. A new opinion poll by Le Soir newspaper has found that 90% of citizens surveyed in Belgium said the war worries them, but that they do not support direct military intervention over concerns that it could trigger a new world war. A quarter of those questioned said the West's supply of weapons to fighters in Ukraine is, quote, a bad thing. We have also been asking members of the public about this.
Yeah, I think we should stop doing that, huh? Because, war... fights war and then ends up in more war. So it's more about like discussing, talking.
It's a very good thing to have a dialogue with Russians and hopefully sort this out without war.
Ideally, diplomacy is the way that this comes to an end, but it takes two sides. From what I'm reading, they don't want to negotiate at all yet.
On Tuesday, the European Commission defended the decisions taken by EU governments to send arms to Ukraine.
In this case, more weapons doesn't mean more war. More weapons for Ukraine means more ability for the Ukrainian army to defend its people.
As concerns over possible escalation continue to increase, Finland and Sweden are expected to announce, before the end of this month, if they intend to join NATO. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Russia announces a decision to expel 31 European diplomats in a tit-for-tat move. The Russian Foreign Ministry says it has declared 15 Dutch diplomats persona non grata and given them 2 weeks' leave. 12 Belgian diplomats have also been asked to leave. Moscow has yet to respond to moves by Germany and France to withdraw 40 of their envoys to Russia, which means more European diplomats are likely to be sent home soon. This amid a war of words between Moscow and the West. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz says Russian President Vladimir Putin is responsible for, quote, war crimes in Ukraine. Russia denies the allegations, calling it a propaganda tactic in a smear campaign. Meanwhile, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has censored Russia's new offensive in eastern Ukraine and called for a 4-day ceasefire to mark the Orthodox Holy Week. Moving on, Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson has apologized to Parliament as he has become the first British leader to be fined for breaking the law in a so-called Partygate scandal.
And I offer the British people a full apology. And I take this opportunity on the first available sitting day to repeat my wholehearted apology to the House. As soon as I received the notice, I acknowledged the hurt and the anger. And I said that people had a right to expect better of their Prime Minister. And I repeat that, Mr. Speaker, again in the House now.
Despite his apology, however, Johnson claimed that he did not know at the time that the parties were breaching the law. The penalty was announced last week by the police, which are investigating a dozen gatherings held at Johnson's office and residence during the 2020-21 coronavirus lockdown periods. Johnson would first deny any such events, but later admitted to the parties. The opposition parties say Johnson repeatedly lied to the public. In the Parliament session, Labour Party leader Keir Starmer has said that Johnson is a man without shame. British Prime Minister has been hit by a series of controversies. He has also made missteps in the past 6 months. Tensions remain high in occupied West Bank, where Israeli forces have once again attacked Palestinian protesters with tear gas and rubber-coated bullets. The Palestinian Red Crescent says at least 72 people were injured near the village of Burqa, west of Nablus. The Palestinians were protesting against a march, that is, by Israeli settlers, demanding the reestablishment of a nearby settlement evacuated in 2005. The situation has recently been tense in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds, with Israeli forces and settlers storming the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. At least 170 Palestinians were injured in the attack on Friday alone. The Israeli aggression has drawn widespread condemnation. On Tuesday, the UAE summoned the Israeli ambassador to protest against the regime's violations. Abu Dhabi expressed concern over the escalation of tensions, saying this threatens stability and security in the region. We contracted our correspondent in West Bank, and we have some perspective on what happened today.
Settlers from the illegal settlements in northern occupied West Bank, they marched to one of the Israeli settlements, let's say abandoned or evacuated settlements known as Homesh. This settlement, illegal settlement, was built on lands from the village of Burqa. That's why Palestinians from Burqa protested in order to prevent the march of the Israeli settlers. However, before the march, the Israeli soldiers closed with concrete barriers the entrances of Burqa, as well as the road between Jenin and Nablus, and the entrances of a number of Palestinian villages located very close to the illegal settlement, the evacuated settlement of Homesh. Palestinians tried to leave the village of Burqa in order to face the Israeli settlers and to prevent this march. However, Israeli soldiers who were stationing outside the village opened fired rubber-coated bullets, as well as tear gas and rubber-coated bullets towards the protesters. Palestinian paramedics said at least 70 Palestinians were wounded.
Iran's foreign minister calls on Muslim nations to support to the people of Palestine to achieve their historical rights. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remarks in a phone call with his newly appointed Mauritanian counterpart, Mohammed Salem Ould Merzouk. The two top diplomats slammed Israel's recent raids on Al-Aqsa Mosque. He thanked Mauritania for its supportive stance towards the Palestinian people. The two officials also discussed the development of Iran and Mauritania relations. The Afghan capital has witnessed back-to-back bomb attacks targeting an educational center and a high school. Dozens were killed and injured in the attacks. Rahmatullah Bakhban reports from Kabul.
People in the west of Afghan capital Kabul were once again terrified after three explosions hit an educational center and a high school, leaving dozens of people dead and injured. Soon after the attack, we rushed Abdulrahim Shahid High School to talk with eyewitnesses.
After the first explosion, I arrived at the scene. Then suddenly the next blast hit the school alley. I saw dozens of students fall on the ground. People started to take the dead and wounded to hospital.
The targeted school is located in Hazaraz residential area, where the community has been bearing the brunt of blind terror attacks. People are now calling on the Taliban to tighten the security and protect all Afghans.
I call on the Taliban to tighten security across our country and protect those at risk. My sister and her children are living here. They are horrified. I don't want this situation to continue. Besides, we can't dare to send our children to educational centers. When will poor Hazaras live in peace? They have long been falling victim to terrorism.
The Taliban, on the other hand, claim that they won't let such attacks repeat in the future, vowing to bring the orchestrators to justice.
First of all, we extend our sympathy to the families of the victims. Secondly, our intelligence and security forces are investigating the incident and will hold those who martyred our innocent citizens accountable. I promise our Hazara brothers that we will take urgent steps to protect them against our common enemy. We will also pay major attention to the security of their public places.
Last year, at least 58 people were killed and more than 100 injured in a bomb attack in a girls' school in the same Shia neighborhood in Kabul. In recent years, suicide attacks in western Kabul have taken the lives of hundreds of civilians, including students. People here say they're exhausted by growing violence and terrorism. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Since the start of the UN-brokered truce in Yemen on the 2nd of April, Saudi Arabia has not opened the Sana'a International Airport. Observers describe the Saudi move as a threat to the political process in the war-torn country. Abdulatif Washali reports.
In a Twitter post, the head of Yemen's national negotiating delegation, Mohammed Abdussalam, said since the entry of the UN-brokered truce, the Saudi-led coalition has prevented flights from reaching the Sana'a International Airport and obstructed the entry of fuel ships to the port of
Hodeidah.
We have entered the third week of the truce while Sana'a Airport has not been opened yet, as it was supposed. Unfortunately, no commercial flight has arrived. even though the airport is technically ready. We do not know what are the reasons that prevent the opening of the airport until now, but what we do know is that the Saudi-led coalition has not adhered to any agreements since the start of its war on our country in 2015.
Observers say the Saudi violations are threatening the UN-brokered agreement which is supposed to build for a comprehensive political solution. They are calling on the United Nations to intervene and open Sana'a Airport. In the beginning of April, the UN envoy for Yemen, Hans Grundberg, announced a two-month truce. The agreement includes opening Sana'a Airport for two flights per week and allowing Yemen's fuel ships to arrive at Hodeidah Port.
For 7 years of war and siege, the United Nations has always been providing the political cover-up for Saudi Arabia's violations of international law. But now that it has brokered an agreement, it should take real measures to force Riyadh to do its part of the truce and open Sana'a Airport. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
China says it firmly rejects U.S. allegations against Beijing on its arms control and non-proliferation policies.
What the U.S. has done gravely undermines globalist strategic balance and stability and impedes the international arms control and disarmament process, and therefore has been widely condemned by the international community. However, instead of reflecting upon itself, the U.S. keeps slinging mud at other countries in a bid to create excuses for freeing itself from its bound obligations and scapegoat others.
Foreign Ministry spokesman further accused Washington of having a deplorable track record in compliance with arms control and non-proliferation agreements and commitments. He cited Washington's withdrawal from many treaties, such as the INF and Open Skies with Russia, as well as its flip-flopping on the 2015 Iran deal. China's reactions come in response to the U.S. State Department's yearly report on compliance with arms control, non-proliferation, and disarmament. The report accuses China of failing to comply with its commitments.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en.
Ramadan, the month of opportunities. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, Salam and welcome to the program. In these blessed moments and days, let us recite this prayer from the Quran. Our Lord, do not make our hearts swerve after you have guided us and bestow your mercy on us. Indeed, you are the All-Munificent. Ramadan is the month of the Quran, and one of the main teachings in the Quran is the attention to the life after death, the life which is shaped by our deeds and is endless. The afterlife is so important that it has been mentioned in 1,200 ayahs of the Noble Quran. Moreover, in other ayahs, the calculation of our deeds on the Day of Judgment has also been mentioned in other ayahs. The ayahs of the Quran and the narrations of the Prophet of Islam and his infallible successors reveal the fact that the Day of Judgment is a very hard and intolerable day. It is the day in which the sky is rent apart, the sun is wound up and turns dark, the stars are scattered and fall down, the mountains are set moving, the sky become like a hot metal. On this day, the trumpet or sur will be blown two times. The first time will cause all living creatures to die, and the second time will revive them to stand at the divine court of justice. God says that everyone's soul suffices as their own reckoner. This means that on the Day of Judgment, our deeds will be embodied. The tongue will be mute, and many witnesses, such as the angels, the infallible imams, and our body organs, will testify our deeds. Thus, none of us will be able to deny and conceal our sins. According to the Quran, on that day, everyone will escape from their near and dear ones. Even nursing mothers will leave their babies. In such unimaginable conditions, a beautiful and luminous companion will be very soothing. The Prophet's 15th infallible successor, Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, says that when everyone stands in God's presence on the Day of Judgment, the reality of the Quran passes through the people as a radiant creature and is embodied before God. Then it will intercede for those who have been habitual reciters of this book and practiced its teachings. And God will accept the intercession of the Quran. A hadith from the Prophet's 11th infallible successor, Imam Hassan Askari, peace upon him, reads that on the Day of Judgment will appear with a beautiful face among people and will ask God for reward for those who used to respect it and fast in it. For sure, the recitation of the Quran in the blessed month of Ramadan is of special importance, as we have said many times. Meanwhile, the Prophet's fourth infallible successor, Imam Zainul Abidin, also known as Sajjad, peace upon him, looks at fasting in a different way. He says, "You should know that fasting is a curtain that God has put on your tongue, ears, eyes, and stomach to safeguard you against the hellfire." Dear listeners, these words are in fact the explication of the Prophet's hadith where he says, "Fasting is a shield against the hellfire." Imam Sajjad goes on to say, So, if your body organs gain calm behind this curtain, be hopeful that you are immune. But if you left them to continue their disorderly and irregular moves, pushing away the curtain, looking with sensuality and trespass the divine limits, then do not be immune of the curtains tearing up, because this is the outward of fasting, and what is important is the spirit and inward of it. In view of the fourth imam, a fasting person should not be content with mere abstention from eating and drinking. He should rather keep his eyes, ears, tongue, and other organs against evil deeds. He must not let his tongue utter evil words, insult, backbite, or calumniate others. He should also prevent his ears from listening to useless and forbidden sounds and words. This is true about his other organs too. As it has been mentioned before, our body organs are the doors to our heart. So, keeping them aloof from sins and evil deeds will guarantee the health of the heart. This is taqwa, or God-weariness, which has been mentioned in Ayah 183 of Surah Baqarah as the fruit of fasting. In the second part of this program, we continue the discussion of the things that nullify fasting. It was said that thick dust nullifies fasting if it reaches the throat. This includes both edible dust like flour and dust of soil. The steam in bathroom or sauna does not nullify fasting unless it is so thick that turns into water drops and is swallowed. Most jurisprudents maintain that smoke of cigarettes and other tobacco products nullifies fasting. But the smoke of a car that reaches the throat accidentally does not nullify fasting. As for those who suffer from asthma and have to use a special spray, if the spray contains some medicine, it will nullify fasting. But if fasting is not possible or too difficult without the spray, the person can use it and it will not nullify fasting. Oxygen that is inhaled for artificial respiration does not nullify fasting as long as it is gas.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio This is your host Musa Al-Bahadli and you are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing In this program you will discuss issues, relevant questions and other fields regarding the Islamic upbringing of children And we would like to stress that the answers that we provide in this program are all based upon the narrations of the household of the Prophet and, of course, of the Prophet himself, and upon the Holy Quran, supplemented with scientific research. Joining us in the studio today is our dear friend, Sheikh Ali Himani, who is an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qum. Dear Sheikh, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for joining us.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. It's my pleasure to be here in your studio.
Dear Sheikh, today I want to talk about this very sensitive phase of these young adults' life. And these teenagers, this phase is also known as the age of hormonal changes and infatuation, meaning that these children who are now grown-ups, they start to experience new feelings, attractions, and also lust, sexual desire. As parents, how should we handle this very sensitive life phase, which can lead to disastrous results?
Very true. You rightly pointed out that if not managed properly, this could lead to very disastrous results.
Right.
So, very true that this is the age of hormonal changes. But let me point out that there's one element that is the hormonal changes, which means the desire and the feelings and the emotions creep up into this person once they reach that puberty and the teenage.
Hormones, naturally.
That is part of the normal process. But let's understand another important element, which we've kind of touched upon slightly in one of our earlier episodes, is that there's a term used in Islamic Shariat, particularly the rulings. When you're looking at the rulings and fatwa from our Maraji Taqlid, you will come across a term called mumayyaz in Arabic and Farsi. In English, let me explain what it means.
Right.
Someone who's mumayyiz means that they're able to differentiate between the right and the wrong, and they've reached the age where if they look at a man and a woman, they can look at the physical features of them and can differentiate clearly that, oh, this is a man and this is a woman, and these are their special parts and these are their special parts.
Right.
And that's why in the rulings you will see that it has been recommended for women that if you are in a place and you have these kind of children who are at this age of mumayyiz or tamiz, which is that age of 9 to 10 years, please cover your ordainments. Please cover your, the beauty parts so that they don't get attracted towards it. They don't start focusing on it, because after this age, those hormonal changes start happening. But before that, they're already aware of these things.
Right.
So most of the parents starts focusing on their kids when they reach the teenage, and they're saying that, okay, now is the time to talk to them. Now is the time to tell them.
Right.
Yeah. But that's already late, because
late.
The child has been looking, noticing, and paying attention, and they even notice the difference in behavior.
Especially in our age, dear Sheikh, with the internet and all
exactly.
of the things that you can find on the internet.
On the TV.
And the television as well. Yeah.
And particularly keeping in mind that the TV is also targeting the tweens and teaching them certain behaviors and teaching them how to be.
Just movies, dear Sheikh, and music,
exactly.
the lyrics and stuff they sing about it.
Exactly.
It's horrible.
So there's a lot happening on the TV, but let me come back. Let's grab a
quick break, dear
Sheikh.
Take
a break and
we'll
come back and talk
back.
About the behaviors, how they notice the difference.
Right. Yeah.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing the age of the hormonal changes in teenagers, namely when they start to feel and develop attractions to the opposite gender. Now, dear Sheikh, just before we went on a quick break, we were mentioning how even the television and adverts and music, they target these teenagers and tweens. Please continue where you left off.
Yep. The most important point that I wanted to emphasize was that when the child is around 9 and 10 years old, even though the hormonal changes have not taken effect in him, but he's able to differentiate not just the physical form, but the behavioral pattern of the father and the mother at home. They would see how the mother behaves. She has more love, kindness, and, grace in her behavior.
I would say she's more feminine in her actions, how she, dresses and stuff.
And the way she walks, the way she talks, the way she flips her hair.
Exactly.
All that is being noticed. And on the other side, they look at the fathers, that how they are macho and they're even aggressive, the way they talk, the kind of words they use, the language they use, the way they walk, sit, talk. And
they're more manly, which unfortunately in today's age, it has become a derogatory term of calling somebody manly or feminine, but that is what it is, right?
Correct. So now what happens is that this child starts noticing, and then there are hundreds of questions on his mind related to the physical behavior, related to the emotional behavior, related to the attitude and behavioral patterns, right?
Right.
So the child is already noticing all this, right? And he being the, let's say the child is a boy, he automatically starts noticing that gracefulness in his sisters and mothers, and it's already building a attention and attraction in him. With the hormonal changes, this intensifies a lot.
Right.
And that's why you will
see... like steroids.
Exactly. So that's why you will see in a house environment, the daughter is more attached to the father, and the son is more skewed towards mother, because they see the opposite behavior in them. So if you look at cultures, different cultures, you would see that the daughter likes to hang around with father, and maybe after the conditioning that's happening from the TV, this might have changed. But in different cultures, if you look at subcontinent, I've been to Singapore, I've been to Malaysia, I've been to Bangkok, I've lived in India, I've lived in Melbourne. I've noticed all these families, including here in this country, I've noticed different families. And you can clearly see that the girls like to spend more time with the father, particularly...
It's a known fact in the entire world that the daughters always are more, I don't want to say attracted, but more
attached,
closer
attached
to the
father. And on the other hand, the sons. This
like
is,
we say, we also have this term, we say mama's boy.
Correct.
And the right.
Correct.
Yeah.
So this starts happening right from age 10, and then this element of hormonal changes kicks in.
But Sheikh, allow me to interrupt you just before we go deeper into the subject, just to clarify this. Attachment, what does it stem from? Because we have psychologists such as, for example, Freud, who says that it is because they are sexually attracted to their own parents, which has caused a lot of issues. Just please, if you could clarify as a psychologist yourself.
See, Freud's point of view is a very, specific and I would say individual point of view, because Freud in his own research has boiled down everything back to sexualism, including a two-year-old child. He says when the child is suckling milk from her, from his or her mother, is basically satisfying his oral sexual needs.
Well,
so
that's quite the far leap.
Uh-huh. So there's something, I would say, something wrong on the upper apartments of Sigmund Freud, because he looks at everything from a sexual point of view. But there is another element, that is the personality types. So the boys have a certain personality type, and they see that this gracefulness is missing in there. Let's come back and discuss here.
Let's continue this after a quick break.
Because there's a little more explanation here. So let's come back after a break here.
Regarding the sixth verse of Surah At-Tahrim, the 66th Surah of the Holy Quran, that is, O you who have faith, save yourselves and your families from a fire. Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam said, save your families from fire by enjoining them to do good and forbidding them from evil deeds.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Just before we went on a break, we were discussing why it is that girls, for example, are more attached to their fathers and boys are more attached to their mothers. And now, Sheikh, you were saying, please continue where you left off.
The personality types. We were talking about the personality types. If you run a quick search on internet, you would see that there are four personality types. There's perfect melancholy, there's popular sanguine, there's phlegmatic, and there is choleric. These are different personality types, and you would see, in, as a general rule, there are opposite personalities in this. A choleric is opposite of phlegmatic. Sanguine is opposite of perfect melancholy. And mostly they get attracted towards each other and then they end up being together and even getting married.
So it's the opposites attract.
That's true to a certain extent. And this is where you would... Why does this happen? This is a very fundamental and necessary element to understand. What happens is a popular sanguine is a personality who's a little, absent-minded, if I want to call it. So when they walk into house, they kick their shoes in one direction and socks in another direction, throw the bag in one corner and get to, you know, to the room to have lunch, right? To the dinner table or lunch table to have lunch. Whereas a melancholy, a perfect melancholy is a personality who walks into the house, takes off the shoes, rolls his socks, puts the right socks into the right shoe, left sock into the left shoe, put the shoe in the shoe rack, put the bag in the right place, goes to the lunch table, washes his hands, and then, in a most composed way, sits on the table to have his lunch. Now, when a sanguine looks at a perfect melancholy, he says, my God, I'm missing all this in my life. This, attitude of being organized, everything being in a right thing at the right place and everything being so perfect, I'm missing it, all this in my life.
Is that subconsciously happening?
Yes, that's subconsciously happening because somewhere they feel that I want that, but I don't have it. So if I marry him, if I associate with him, if I partner with him, I will get all those in my life because that's missing in my life. On the other hand, the popular sanguine is a fun-loving person. And perfect melancholy is not that kind of a... Because for perfect melancholy, everything has to be organized, even the fun. So he has a plan for picnic. He'll say, wake up at 8, get into car by 9, drive for 2 hours, spend so many hours there. This is how we play. This is how we don't play. And so everything is time-mentioned and time-bound.
Time management, basically.
More than time management, everything has to be organized and scheduled. So if you say that I'm going to be at a picnic spot for 2 hours, you cannot go 2 hours, 15 minutes. It upsets him.
Right.
But what he sees is that this sanguine personality has all the fun and joy and happiness and always smiling and laughing. He says, I'm missing that in my life. So let me partner with him so that he, that person brings all this happiness, joy, and fun in my life, and I bring that organized behavior, and together we can lead a perfect life.
Sheikh, so just a question about these different personalities that you yourself mentioned. Are these theories or are these basically confirmed?
These are realities. These are based on individual temperaments, based on where you live, the ambience you're brought up into, the kind of food you eat, the month you were born, the environment you are into, all these factors affect, and it's not permanent. They are changeable. So let's discuss in our next episode, because the point that we were discussing was that why are boys attracted towards mother?
Right.
They are more attached to the mother. And why are daughters more attached to the father? So we'll come back and discuss this.
Sounds perfect, dear Sheikh. Let's continue this discussion in the next program. I thank you for contributing to this discussion and also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. If our dear listeners have any suggestions, feedback or some comments, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir. Alternatively, you can also visit our website, parstoday.com. You can also find us on various social media websites, such as on Twitter and Instagram, under the call handle of Call of Islam Radio. Thank you for tuning in.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Thank you.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In the U.S., new details from evidence cited in the indictment of Enrique Tarrio, the former head of the far-right Proud Boys, reveal a plan with similarities to what unfolded at the Capitol on 6th of January 2021. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Alan Feuer. The piece is titled, Document in January 6 Case Shows Plan to Storm Government Buildings. A document found by federal prosecutors in the possession of a far-right leader in the United States contained a detailed plan to survey and storm government buildings around the Capitol on 6th of January last year, people familiar with the document said on Monday, 14th of March. The document, titled 1776 Returns, was cited by prosecutors last week in charging the far-right leader Enrique Tarrio, the former head of the Proud Boys extremist group, with conspiracy. The indictment of Enrique Tarrio described the document in general terms, but the people familiar with it added substantial new details about the scope and complexity of the plan it set out for directing an effort to occupy six House and Senate office buildings and the Supreme Court last 6th of January. The document does not specifically mention an attack on the Capitol building itself, but in targeting high-profile government buildings in the immediate area and in the detailed timeline it set out, the plan closely resembles what actually unfolded when the Capitol was stormed by a pro-Trump mob intent on disrupting congressional certification of President Joe Biden's Electoral College victory. Many questions remain about the document, including who wrote it and how it made its way to Enrique Tarrio, according to prosecutors, on 30th of December 2020, as President Donald J. Trump was engaged in a series of overlapping schemes to keep himself in power. The people familiar with the document said other evidence the government has gathered suggests that it may have been provided to Enrique Tarrio by one of his girlfriends at the time. Prosecutors have not accused Mr. Tarrio of using the document to guide the actions of the Proud Boys extremist group who played a central role in the Capitol attack. Nor do the charges against him offer any evidence that he shared the document with his five co-defendants: Ethan Nordine, Joseph Biggs, Zachary Rail, Charles Donahue, and Dominic Pozzola. But the document could help explain why prosecutors chose to charge Mr. Tarrio with conspiracy, even though he was not at the Capitol during the attack on 6th of January 2021. And it appears to be the first time that prosecutors have sought to use evidence of a specific written plan to storm and occupy government buildings in their wide-ranging investigation into the attack and what led up to it. Enrique Tarrio's lawyer, Nayab Hassan, declined to comment. Broken into five parts: infiltrate, execution, distract, occupy, and sit-in. The 9-page document recommends recruiting at least 50 people to enter each of the 7 government buildings and advises protesters to appear unsuspecting and to not look tactical, the people familiar with the document have said. After ensuring that crowds at the buildings are full and ready to go, the document suggests that leads and seconds should enter and open doors for others to go in, causing trouble to distract security guards if necessary. Should the crowds fail to gain entrance to the buildings quickly, the document suggests pulling fire alarms at nearby stores, hotels and museums to further distract security guards or the police, the people have said. It then says protesters should occupy the buildings and conduct sit-ins, even recommending slogans for people to chant like "We the People" and "No Trump, No America." The document also makes suggestions for the days leading up to the 6th of January 2021, the people have said, advising protesters to scope out road closures near the 7 target buildings. On the morning of the protest, they added, the document suggests having scouts drive around the buildings to look for roadblocks. While much of the document is marked for internal use, the people said it contains a section known as the Patriot Plan that appears to have been meant for public distribution. This part of the document suggests that crowds begin to gather at the 7 buildings at 1 p.m. on 6th of January 2021, the people familiar with the document have said. 30 minutes later, the public part of the plan calls for the crowds to await a signal from lead and then to storm the buildings. The indictment of Enrique Tarrio, who recently stepped down as chairman of the Proud Boys extremist group, was a significant development in the Justice Department's sprawling investigation of the Capitol attack, and the second time in recent months that charges had been brought against the leader of an extremist group that played a prominent role in the assault on 6th of January. In January, prosecutors indicted Stuart Rhodes, the leader of the Oath Keepers militia, with seditious conspiracy for what the government has described as a plot to violently disrupt the work of Congress. Altogether, more than 30 Proud Boys have been charged so far in connection with the Capitol attack, and many more took part in it, but have not been charged. Members of the group, who have long served as vocal and often violent advocates for Donald Trump, were instrumental in several key moments in the riot, including one at the Capitol's security perimeter that resulted in the first breach of the barricades. Prosecutors are still investigating the group. In court papers filed last week, they said they had recently carried out search warrants at the homes in North Carolina and central Pennsylvania of 2 top members of the group. Those members were later identified as Jeremy Bertino and John Stewart, according to people familiar with the matter. Unlike many of his subordinates, Enrique Tarrio was not in Washington on 6th of January 2021, having been arrested 2 days earlier for vandalizing a Black Lives Matter banner at a black church in the city after a pro-Trump rally in December of 2020 that spiraled into violence after nightfall. Charged with a second crime, the possession of 2 high-capacity rifle magazines, he was ordered to leave Washington, D.C. by a local judge as part of his release agreement. But federal prosecutors said in their indictment that although Mr. Tario was not accused of physically taking part in the breach of the Capitol, he nonetheless led the advance planning and remained in contact with other members of the Proud Boys extremist group during the storming of the building. Prosecutors have claimed, for example, that Mr. Tario issued orders before the attack for members of the group to leave behind their traditional black and yellow polo shirts and remain incognito when they arrived in Washington, D.C. In the days leading up to the 6th of January attack, Mr. Tario also took part in a private Telegram group chat with other Proud Boys called the Ministry of Self-Defense and appeared to watch from a distance as several leaders and members of the group stormed the Capitol building, prosecutors have said. Arrested last Tuesday in his hometown of Miami, Florida, Enrique Tario is expected to appear in court there on Tuesday for a hearing to determine his bail. On Monday, prosecutors released court papers recommending that he remain in custody and arguing that he encouraged his compatriots to press on even as they broke into the Capitol. "Proud of my boys and my country," Enrique Tario posted on social media not long after lawmakers were chased from the building, delaying the final certification of the presidential election. Around the same time, prosecutors have said, a member of the Proud Boys posted a message in an encrypted chat asking, "Are we a militia yet?" Enrique Tario responded with a one-word voice note, prosecutors have said. Yep.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.